It's a numbers game with your host, Gil Alexander.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Hour number two of a numbers game right here at Visa, the Sports Betting Network, Series XM Channel 204, Visa.com, the Visa app, Fubo, Sling, and Game Plus. It's all brought to you by Manscaped.com, y'all. Manscaped.com has the tools for your family jewels. You can get 20% off plus free shipping with the code VSIN20 at Manscaped.com. That's 20% off at Manscaped.com with promo code VSIN20. Skill Alexander, Jason Kahn is here. Jason, Doyers, champions. You pumped, man?
Exhaling right now.
Man, let me tell you, that series was tougher than it needed to be.
It was very Dodgery in moments, and at least they came back after that.
Dodgerian? Is that what you just said?
It was Dodgery in moments. We had to get out Dodgered by the Rays.
Just pump for everybody who cashed. Pump for you because you're a fan of the Dodgers.
And I cashed.
And you cashed. You did it both. Yeah, like I said earlier, every which way. Corey Seager, if you could just have done the MVP stuff during the regular season, man, it would have been epic. But he was top seven. He was definitely among the seven players in the National League that were in the MVP conversation. But I think in the end, it's probably Freddie Freeman or Juan Soto because their advanced stats were just a little notch above. But that's the way the cookie crumbles. So congratulations to all Dodgers fans. More importantly, from our perspective, Dodgers backers. Let's talk a little college football. We haven't had a chance to do this yet this week at any great length. Let's bring in Pete Futak from College Football News. Good morning to you, Peter.
We're men of a certain age. Can I make a pitch here on your show here? I want to change the baseball MVP from the Willie Mays Award, because Willie Mays kind of sucked in the World Series, to the Reggie. I just want to call it the flame. Look at Reggie's stat lines in the World Series over 27 games. It's ridiculous. He has something crazy like 10 home runs, 24 RBIs, like a 780 slugging percentage, like a 390 batting average. Reggie Jackson's the greatest player in World Series history. I say call it the Reggie.
Wow.
All-timer great. That's just me.
Greatest in World Series history, really. Wow.
Reggie Jackson was always big growing up, but it feels like he's kind of fallen out. Like, you don't really see him on TV.
Well, he's a curmudgeonly old man. Doesn't help him, right? Like, he's not a PR-friendly kind of guy. But three home runs famously in a game in the 1977 World Series. By the way, Pablo Sandoval, the panda, did the same for the Giants in one of their World Series runs as well. I would like to name it the Madison Bumgarner Trophy myself, but okay
fine,
we can debate.
Fine.
The Panda's got
but Reggie, the Reggie three homer is like one of my first ever sports memories. I was like in sleeping or something. I remember my dad screaming and getting up and seeing the third home run. So that's a little part of this as well.
There was no way I was at an age where my parents would let me. By the way, my mom ran that household like with an iron fist, now that you mention it. I was not allowed, like Monday Night Football, seriously, would start at 9 p.m. Eastern. And my bedtime, like I remember my bedtime was like 9:15. On Monday Night Football, I would like remain quiet so I could get past. She like granted me till 9:30. Good Lord, the way she ran that household.
That's like reason number 1,000 I want to move to Hawaii because all the games there start early. And East Coast time, people forget just how just late those things are. But I digress.
I'm sorry. So making a call after this show and letting her have it. She's going to be like, where is this coming from? I was like, I talked to Futak and I got a little upset. That's what's going to happen. Can we talk about Wisconsin?
And absolutely.
Yeah. So listen, we talked about it with Justin Turner yesterday, and whether we like it or not, it creeps into all kinds of different sports conversations. But with Wisconsin, this is a season changer kind of thing. So early October, and you correct me if I'm wrong here, Jack Cohn suffers a non-contact injury to his foot during a practice, and he's confirmed, okay, he's out indefinitely. And then Graham Wirtz, who looked fabulous, like in a Jameis Winston show up for the first time kind of way, you're like, oh my God, this guy's going to be awesome. And then he comes down with COVID. It's corroborated with a subsequent test. He's gone for 21 days. And then it turns out Chase Wolf, the third string quarterback, I don't mean to giggle, I'm saying it's just amazing, positive too. And so now the Danny Vandenboom mini era begins. And we see the line, Wisconsin-Nebraska, which opened at 11, it's 3. What are you thinking about all this?
It went down fast. Look, all these guys, you know, I went to Wisconsin. Look, you know, if I hit 20 of 21 passes like, you know, Graham Mertz did, I'm hitting frat row. But This is the problem. This is the nightmare scenario for all these teams, is that what happens if COVID wipes out an entire position group? What do you do? And good on the Big Ten. I mean, just that they have the hard stop 21-day rule. If you get it, you get tested again. Yep. If you get tested again and you're positive, 21 days, no wiggle room on this. And it's not just because of the infection rate, because, you know, look, you know, the honest truth here is that most of these guys, if they get it, are going to be just fine. Nobody's going to die necessarily, but there's so much concern out there over heart issues when it comes to college athletes. Is that what they're finding is that this thing isn't just about, you know, you're not going to die, but you're going to have scarring maybe. And they're finding, there's a study that said like 1 in 7 college athletes who have gotten this, they're finding some issues with their heart afterwards. And the 21 days kind of gives about a much of an all clear as possible. So that's it. So Graham Mertz starts out with one of the greatest debuts ever, like you said, and this is why we can't have nice things. You know, it's now he's out, but getting to the line, not now we're going to do the ugly and awkward shift of taking a global pandemic and a horrible disease making it to the lines in football.
Always awkward.
But I've liked Wisconsin before. I like him now. Look, you know, if Wisconsin's big issue is that they didn't run the ball effectively enough, that's one of those glitches I think a team like Wisconsin can fix. So Nebraska's pretty good, but that defense for Wisconsin's the real deal. Didn't give up an offensive point against Illinois. The time of possession was ridiculous, partially because of Mertz. I mean, they had the ball for something crazy like 43 minutes. I still think they beat Wisconsin or beat Nebraska, and now you're getting fewer points to give away to do it.
Talking to Pete Futak.
If they play, by the way.
Talking to Pete Futak, by the way, at Pete Futak, F-I-U-T-A-K on Twitter, from College Football News, a treasure trove of college football knowledge. I will say this, though. I thoroughly enjoyed Big Ten football last week. Like, for me, it was way better than the SEC debut, where we were like, oh, I can't wait, it's SEC football. This was awesome to me. First of all, shout out to our buddy Chris Felica, the Bear, from ESPN's College Game Day, and his partner, Stanford Steve, who were all over Rutgers on their podcast again against Michigan State, against the number. And Rutgers wins it outright, never in doubt, 38-27 over the Spartans, who got problems of their own. And then, of course, later we had Michigan just rolling Minnesota. Milton looked fabulous for Michigan. It looks like Jim Harbaugh may have himself a quarterback. Imagine that. And, of course, the one that I'm saving for last, and Ohio State obviously rolled. That was their thing. They may be the one team that is upset proof in this conference. Maybe Michigan, too. We'll see. But the big one was obviously Indiana and Penn State, and Indiana winning this in overtime. The famous Devin Ford, it was a foreshadowing of Todd Gurley the next day in the NFL. Devin Ford, a split second too late, just crossing the plane. Like, I don't think I was supposed to do that. And so a 21-20 game becomes a 28-20 game, which actually gives Indiana life. Of course, they matriculate the ball down the field. Penix finally shows up for a drive. They get the two-point conversion. They force overtime. They get within a point of overtime, and they say, you know what? We're going for two. Okay. Didn't look like he got there live. But
I thought he didn't get in.
Yeah.
Even on the reviews and stuff. But yeah, you know, the other viewpoint of this is, of course, he didn't get in. Penn State got screwed, but it's Penn State, so you know, screw it. So it's all right if it happened to a certain team. But yeah, you know what? It's hard to tell a college kid, you know, you work all your life and you work so hard, and there is a touchdown there to be had. Hey, stop. You know, it's kind of hard for him to do. But look, Penn State stop him. I mean, Penn State gave up under 150 yards to that point in the game. And then they give up a game-winning drive, a two-point conversion, and then another touchdown on two-point conversion. So there's that problem. Theoretically, the apples and oranges to Gurley, I'm sort of like, I get it where you go down to the one. But even if you're losing by one, even if you're an NFL team, you never, ever assume that you're going to do this. So I don't have a huge problem with Gurley with this. Okay, you scored. Now you're up 7. To me, theoretically, I'm the never go for two guy, but that's a free shot to go for 2 points. Because if you miss, at worst, you're up 7. And the other team, if it marches down and scores, then it's on the other coach to try to either win the game with a two, or they're probably going to try to send it into overtime, so you're all right. Or you go for two and you end it with a minute and a half to go. I don't know why coaches, I know their analytics and their numbers say, you know, you kick the extra point and make them, you know, kick, get a touchdown and go for two. But if you hit the two, game over. And they didn't do that. So I kind of have a problem with that. But yeah, if you're Penn State, you're kind of ticked about all this, but that defense did a great job. That's kind of why you kind of mentioned Ohio State before in this week's game. That defense is good enough. I think they can kind of keep this score relatively low, because lost in that loss to Indiana was the D put on a show until the final 2 minutes of that game.
Yeah, it's an interesting point about going for two at that point. It's not a spite to it. It's a crying over spilled milk go for two. Like, you're so upset with yourself for doing it. Like, well, we did that, so let's just try to end this right now because we made that mistake kind of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was.
By the way, going back to Rutgers, you thought about Rutgers before, is that people are going to overreact to this and think, wow, Rutgers is back. Look at this number. Look at their line. Their offense is still bad. It's not like they did anything. Right. Now, to give all credit to they, you know, they turned it over three times, which gets lost because Michigan State turned it over seven times. They couldn't hang on to the ball. Give the credit to the Rutgers defense for forcing the mistakes and getting the seven takeaways and then converting from there. But don't overreact to this. Rutgers is still awful at college football. So I love the Bear. I love Stanford, Steve. It's a little bit of the equivalent of taking the 54-foot shot and it going in. But still, they're still bad. Don't jump all over Rutgers quite yet.
Well, I think they deserve credit. They were all over it for the reasons they stated. But I think you're right.
They're all over Iowa too, but okay.
Maybe it's more of a commentary on Michigan State than it was about Rutgers, is what you're saying.
Both. Yeah, absolutely. Michigan State's got a long way to go too, but. What we learn about this is the start of the Big Ten season is mirroring the start of every other conference this year. Nothing makes sense. The Mountain West, by the way, completely went bonkers. You know, Boise State and San Diego State did what they're supposed to do, but what we're finding with the SEC season, the ACC season, every conference so far, especially the Big 12 versus the Sun Belt, every conference, these teams are not right compared to what they should be had they had a full off season, a full spring, full normal fall practices. And these teams coming out of the gate, they're just odd. So again, as we said with every other conference, go with the underdog if you like them in this, because they're starting to pay out, and they certainly did this last weekend.
Let me ask you this. David Pollack on ESPN radio this morning when I was driving in just occurred to me as I'm talking to you, because I think I agree with him when he says this. And you're about to have a pick that Bama is involved with. So I just thought of what he said, which is he thinks the Jalen Waddle injury, and Jalen Waddle out for the year. By the way, Nick Saban, when he got interviewed afterwards, did he have to say, well, you know, he took the ball out of the end zone? So, like, did he have to say that? Just say you're sorry. he couldn't help himself. Well, you know, he did take the ball out of the end zone. So it's like, Nick, just he's a kid and he's out for the year. Have a little more heart. But David Pollack said he thinks Jalen Waddle not being there for the rest of the year could be the difference between Alabama winning it all and not winning it all. Like, he just thinks it's a monster injury for them. I agree.
Certainly doesn't help, but let me put it this way. Alabama's offense is pretty good. It's been as good as it's ever been. And they lost four players to the top, I believe, 14 picks in the NFL draft. They lose four offensive players, including Jerry Jeudy, including Henry Ruggs, including Tua. And they just keep on rolling. Look, you know, Jalen Waddle, obviously you don't get better by losing him. But Clemson lost a bunch of talent this offseason as well. They had problems with injury and they keep on rolling. Once you get into the tournament, you roll the dice from there. Is Jalen Waddle the difference between beating Clemson in the national championship and not beating Clemson? It, again, doesn't help. I'm not ready to go that far with it, but if you look at the rest of Alabama's schedule, it should roll through this. So there's really no excuse. And look, you know, it's Alabama. They had guys who you had four and five star guys who stepped up in place. A while went nuts last week against Tennessee. And the crazy part about that game is, you know, they didn't throw a touchdown pass in that game. They still threw for over 400 yards and won easily. Yeah, so again, you don't, You don't lose a player like that and get better, but I'm not ready to go that far yet.
I'm more on the Pollock side, because as he said, but they don't run 4-2, those other guys. I mean, he is such a terror every time he touches the football. But I will say this, Mac Jones is playing great. So, yeah, I mean, they're still... do I expect them to be in the playoff? I still do. Let's get to your picks this week, Pete, and because we touched on a couple of the teams. So let's review the Wisconsin play. Wisconsin is 3. Would you still play Wisconsin here with their fourth string quarterback?
Absolutely. Danny Vandenboom and his era. He was a talent coming out. He just couldn't quite get through the depth chart yet. They're not going to go crazy. They're going to go Wisconsin. They're going to pound the ball still. I still think don't overlook this Wisconsin defense. Illinois did nothing last week. Nebraska's better than Illinois. I still think that the defense and the running game are going to come through. You're getting a nice line here. Go with the Badgers.
Wisconsin, Danny Vandenboom, -3 over Nebraska. That's what it is, consensus right now. And then we mentioned Bama. Mississippi State catching 30.5. You're going to take the, let's call it 31 now, consensus. Let's not shortchange them. You're taking the 31?
That's just a lot. You know, it's not getting better for Mississippi State. Kylin Hill's going to opt out, and he's going to go off to the NFL, so they lose their best player. But they've had 2 weeks off. And they're going to lose. They're going to get trucked. But 31's just a lot. It's not necessarily the same theory that I had last week with Syracuse and Clemson. But if I'm walking into that stadium up 31 with a Mike Leach team, I'm going to just take my chances that something's going to kind of work. The other thing about Mississippi State that's getting totally lost in this, their defense has been great. I could be wrong on this, but I believe they have the number one D in the SEC. They are pretty good against the pass. Again, Alabama's going to win, but I think Alabama probably puts up 38-ish, about 40 points in this. So I do think Mississippi State can put up at least 10 to 14 points here. I like 31. It's just way too many points to be given away.
All right, you like two more here, both in the Big Ten. Where are you going here?
Purdue over Illinois. And when Illinois starts to score, I'll believe it. Jake Hansen, their best defensive player, had a really scary concussion issue last week against Wisconsin. The defensive front is great at getting into the backfield. But if Graham Mertz is going to go 20 of 21, and he's a big-time talent to be sure, welcome to Purdue's offense. They're not going to have Rondale Moore, it looks like, but that thing's going to keep winging around the yard. The passing game should work. I don't think Illinois can quite keep up. If you liked Purdue at all last week against Iowa, then you got to like them only giving away 7 against Illinois.
And then Minnesota coming off their big loss at the hands of Michigan, -20 over Maryland. You like Minnesota. You're laying the points. Poor Maryland.
I kind of am a believer that Michigan's just kind of that good and not really Minnesota being that bad. And look, Northwestern's better. Northwestern has a quarterback in Peyton Ramsey now, the added transfer. The defense was always going to be good, but 43-3. I mean, Maryland couldn't do anything. I mean, Northwestern's all right. They're not that good. And Maryland just looked like they couldn't even play. Going back to last year, look, it's ugly, but this program's just not good. They had the one great game against Syracuse. Nothing else positive happened. So until Maryland shows us something, only 20 points again after a 40-point loss to Northwestern, I'm going to take my chances on the Gophers here.
I grew up around Maryland football, or the University of Maryland.
Isn't it? I know.
Yeah, so it's just tough. All right, let's do rapid fire here. Ohio State, Penn State. I guess the marquee matchup of this week. Obviously, Penn State coming off the loss to Indiana, which we just talked about. Ohio State by 12. You think that's an appropriate line?
Yeah, it's right about right. I'm going to take Penn State I don't think they're going to win this thing, but it's all Justin Fields. The running game outside of Fields didn't really work all that well. Now Fields was awesome against Nebraska. Sean Clifford was really good too last week. He was able to run the ball, but they have a depleted group of running backs. I like Penn State to keep this just a little bit closer just because of that defense. I think Clifford's going to be all right. Ohio State wins. I don't think there's a whole lot of drama in it, but that 12 is just a lot to be given away.
All right. Last week, in the same way that I said Tua at 10-1, or some people even saw it at 14-1, is good value for Offensive Rookie of the Year, sight unseen, because the Dolphins have a path to a division title, hypothetically, in the way that Justin Herbert and Joe Burrow do not. I also advocated, hey, look, here's Justin Fields at 6-1, sight unseen, yeah, with Ohio State for the Heisman. Now it's 4-1. Still value there, you think?
A little bit, you know, because who else is there? I mean, Najee Harris, maybe. Kyle Trask, if he goes off against Georgia, maybe. But there just aren't that many guys. I mean, you know, it's the Trevor Lawrence Invitational, and yeah, he's got Notre Dame next week. If he rocks in that, it's going to be hard to kind of say, nah, it's not Trevor Lawrence. But look, Justin Fields is going to be it. He, again, they don't have J.K. Dobbins. Their running backs are okay. They're not amazing. But dude went 20 of 21 last week, led the team in rushing.
I'm saying
he's going to do that every week. So I still think there's value in there only because there's the absence of everybody else. It really is Najee Harris, maybe Mac Jones, maybe Kyle Trask. Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields, sure, 4-1. There's still value.
Yeah, let's put it this way. He couldn't have done anything more last week at 6-1, and now he's 4-1. So, I mean, to me, he's pitching a perfect game here through the first inning is basically the deal with Justin Fields. I still think there might be value. But you're right, though. It is the Trevor Lawrence Invitational, which leads me to my last question. We only have 30 seconds for the answer. Trevor Lawrence hinting that he might stick around for a senior year. Is that just nonsense in the moment where he's like, I'm so sick of this question, I'm just going to say it? Or is there something there?
All college kids, when they're in the moment, love playing college football because they love all the trappings of it. He's going to go to the NFL. And if he doesn't, Dabo Sweeney should be like, son, thank you very much for your service. Go make your $100 million.
Yeah. I'm going to have to ask Lombardi about this. Are we tanking for Trevor? Or are we tanking for Justin? What are we doing? We'll find out. Pete, thank you as always, man.
The Jets aren't going to have the number one pick the following year either if they don't take Trevor this. So.
Thank you, Pete. I appreciate it, man.
Later, Gil.
Pete Vutak from College Football News. We'll come back. Brady Cannon on golf as well. They're in Bermuda this week. 2 weeks away from the Masters. Coming back in Numbers Game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
To A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
Numbers Game brought to you by BetMGM Nevada. Proudly brought to you by BetMGM Nevada. We're proud to have them. It's Gil Alexander. Jason Kahn is here as well. Aaron, who's trustworthy producer here on the network, and who does... Aaron, what do you do, Lombardi line after this? He does the Lombardi line. He produces Lombardi line. He came in with the Tua news when it broke and just came in and said, hey, yeah, that Wisconsin game just got canceled. So everything literally 5-10 minutes ago. So everything we talked about with Wisconsin and Nebraska, as Pete said, if it happens, and sure enough, it doesn't happen. So thank you to Aaron. That is no longer. As we speak with Pete about it, it goes by the wayside. So no Wisconsin, Nebraska this week. They've shut down all team activities for 7 days, I believe he said.
That's the report.
7 days, no team activities. Boy, what a...
Week two of the Big Ten season.
Listen... You know, this is the moment, Jason, where I like to say, if only this were predictable, you know. But we're not allowed to say that, right? Okay. This is a tweet from Chris Felica last night during the baseball game. The Bear, who we hope to have on later this week on the show, our buddy the Bear from ESPN's College Game Day. Hard to find a truer indicator of whether something was a good or bad decision than asking someone who had a bet on the game. My guess is it would be pretty close to unanimous that every Dodgers bettor was ecstatic when Snell got pulled. What say you, beating the book? That's my Twitter. Yeah, this is the truth serum we always talk about. And that was the moment, just to reiterate what we said in the first segment. There's no better truth serum than having a bet on something. And we usually talk about it with fourth down and short situations or fourth down anything and anything situations in football. If you're backing the team on offense, if you're backing on the team on defense, and you have a bet on it for either side, you know exactly what you want the other team to do or not to do. If you're on the defensive side, you're like, oh, please kick a field goal. Please kick a field goal, right? Or whatever it is.
It was hard to believe almost when they came out and pulled him from it was as a Dodgers fan, it was
yes,
double take moment.
Well, it was again knowing that it was 3-2 and knowing here's this 1-0 ball game where the Dodgers can't do anything. And you get the one hit from Taylor and you're like, is he about to pull him? And you knew at that moment, you're like, and again, it's like the right dun 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 dun. All of a sudden, the music starts in your head, and you're like, "We about to win this,"
which never happens as a Dodgers fan. Like, it was so unusual.
Six pitches later, 2-1, Doyers. Mookie hits the insurance run later, the insurance ding dong, to make it 3-1. But again, I will stop short of saying, because what Chris is saying is 100% right. Absolutely the truth serum at that point. And if you're a Rays backer, you probably felt the opposite. At least you should have. I'm sure you did if you were a Rays backer. I will stop short again of saying, though, because I hear a lot of people saying this morning, if they had left Snell in, they never would have lost. You can't say that. You don't know that either. It was only 1-0. But was he dominant to that point? Absolutely. Should Kevin Cash have done that? Hell no. Even Paul Spora and I have not agreed on much during this World Series. He was a Rays guy. I was a Dodgers guy. But that, like, we texted. We go, okay, we agree on something now. Like, that shouldn't have happened. So Dodgers win it. And look, they were the best team in baseball all year. Even before the season with season win totals, they had the highest. They went over that. This is their third World Series appearance in 4 years, and they didn't win the first two. And this is the one that came home for them, and they're the best team in baseball, period, from start to finish. Do you think, as a Dodgers fan, now this is, of course, the sports radio question, right? Do you think 10 years from now you will feel asterisky about this championship? Not as a Dodgers fan, because as a Dodgers fan, you're going to say, hey, of course not. But just as a baseball fan, do you think, or we could say this for basketball, we could say for hockey, right? They had their own quirks, but at least they had their season start. Baseball was the one sport where it's like, they delayed the whole thing. It was only 60 games, expanded playoffs, all these different rules. Do you think you'll feel differently about this years from now?
I don't think you can discount what they went through for the last 3-4 months. So it may be an isolated incident, hopefully, or an isolated set of circumstances. But, I just think that they dealt with what they had. And, in some ways you could say it was a little bit harder to accomplish what they did than it might have been during a regular season.
Yeah, I don't think we will. I really don't think we will. It was a season like any other. They earned it. They absolutely earned it. And I would love to see fewer than 162 games next year. And we might be forced into it.
It didn't really feel like a shortened season. Like, it was shorter, but by the time we got to the playoffs and the World Series, aside from the fans not being there, it felt like playoff baseball. Same thing with basketball.
We get tweets. John Louis, Gil, huge fan of all your work, but this show, talking about yesterday's political show, still managed to stand out. Actionable information on avoiding getting trick rolled notwithstanding. This might have been my favorite show to date. That's a reference to an old Megapod. This one from, let's see here. This is also from Twitter at Beating the Book. This is from a gentleman who said, Latham, Manfred sounded like a guy who had the incoming decision or the looming decision to postpone Game 7 for a COVID outbreak and had turned to the bottle for comfort. What a scene last night with everything going on. Brady Cannon, golf, next. Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
To A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
It's a big week here at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, and we have some great news for everyone. Starting right now, you can watch every VSiN show for free on VSiN.com all week long. Watch Follow the Money at 7 a.m. Eastern, A Numbers Game at 10 a.m., The Lombardi Line, My Guys in the Desert, and our full 14 hours of live daily sports betting programs. It's all free, 24/7 on VSiN.com this week. And while you're there, check out our 10-day free subscription trial to sample everything we have to offer, including the daily Best Bets email and our Point Spread weekly betting guide. It's the perfect week to get more from VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Just head to VSiN.com now to start watching for free. Before we get to Bermuda and Brady and golf, David Purdom, who does such a great job over at ESPN Chalk, has this story. You ready for this? Negated Chicago Bears sack leads to a daily fantasy player losing out on a $1 million prize.
Oh, whoa.
God. Bruh, I feel your pain, if you know what I mean. a stat correction that changed a sack to a tackle for loss in the Chicago Bears Los Angeles Rams game Monday caused a $997,000 fantasy football heartbreak for a 41-year-old insurance agent in St. Louis. For 30 minutes after Monday's game ended, Rob Hunts thought he had won the $1 million first prize in a DraftKings contest. Everything had worked out perfectly for Hunts down the stretch of the Rams 24-10 win. One of his lineups that featured both the Bears and Rams defenses had scored 92.79 points, the most out of the 176,470 entries. His computer screen showed a $1 million first prize. He texted with friends and called his parents to share the exciting news and took his dog Achilles for a quick walk, never bringing Achilles into the matter. It always goes wrong. When he returned, he wanted to refresh his computer screen again, just to see myself on top, he said, and then boom. A sack that had been credited to the Bears' defense late in the fourth quarter was changed to a running play, a three-yard loss by Rams quarterback Jared Goff. That three-yard loss dropped Hunts into a tie for sixth with 18 other entries, and his prize money dropped from $1 million to $3,078.94. Heartbreaking on many levels, a resigned Hunts told ESPN on Tuesday.
What's the difference? Was it an intentionally called running play for Goff? Is that what the difference was between?
Not sure of the exact play they're talking about, so I can't comment. But obviously,
I mean, it feels if it's a quarterback running and he's tackled behind the line of scrimmage, it's a sack. It's just a vagueness in the rule that I don't understand.
Purdom goes on to say the play in question occurred with 3 minutes left in the fourth quarter. On third down, Goff faked a handoff to the right side, bootlegged back to the left. James Vaughters of the Bears didn't bite on the fake, teamed with Keem Hicks to bring Goff down 3 yards behind the line of scrimmage. Initially credited with the sack, Hicks was, but the official score later changed the play to a three-yard loss on a run by Goff. Rams receivers appeared to be blocking downfield, an indication of a designed run. Sacks are not credited on designed runs. There is your answer. David Purdom.
Technicality.
David Purdom on the job over at ESPN. Nice
wow.
job,
who,
David.
Who makes that call? Is that the NFL?
Well, that's the NFL, and then DraftKings just goes with what's, the play-by-play on that. Wow. Let's bring in Brady Cannon. Let's talk golf, Bermuda. Brady, good to see you at Circa last night, my friend.
Absolutely. You and the wonderful Deborah, and, of course, our friend Bill Krakenberger out there. It was great. So many smiling faces all over the new property. It was a really fun time, and great to welcome a new property to the Las Vegas landscape.
Absolutely, it was. Great to see you. Great to meet your wife for the first time. We've never met before, I don't believe.
Yeah. No, I know. All the years of the Megapod and this mysterious Gil Alexander, we got to meet in person.
Your phantom friend, Gil. Oh, he exists, really. Does he, Brady? Have you ever been to Bermuda, by the way?
I have not. Have you?
Oh, yes. Horseshoe Bay. It is phenomenal. I love Bermuda. It's not a Caribbean island. It's like east of North Carolina. So the weather is kind of quirky. It's like, it's not Caribbean. So it kind of goes with the seasons as well. But it is just absolutely gorgeous. And that's where the PGA Tour is this weekend. 2 weeks away from the Masters, Brady. We're ramping up. You're renting out some time on a numbers game in 2 weeks, right? We're doing it together?
Exactly. Yeah, we have Dave Tindall, a mutual friend from the UK, and of course we have to do him in an earlier morning time slot to accommodate his schedule. Yes. 8 hours later from us. So we'll have him on numbers game, just like we did with Ben Coley for the U.S. Open.
Yeah, it's a numbers game, long shots co-production. I'm making a bigger deal out of it than it is. Okay, we look forward to that. All right, Bermuda Championship. Then who you got? Who you playing?
There's only one player in the field this week that is ranked in the top 50 in the world, and I projected that this would not be a star-studded field because you come off of, the CJ Cup and the Zozo, which were tremendous events as far as star power. And then, you've got kind of a tweener week before the Masters, before the Houston Open. Some guys will tee it up the week before a major, some won't, but I felt this was the soft spot in the schedule where you wouldn't get too much. So, and we've only seen this tournament once before, so there's not a lot of history to go off of here. So I went deeper down the board and took some stabs at some longer shots. The shortest shot I took was Doc Redman, who's been playing very, very well, has 7 top 30 finishes since the restart in June. I took guys that putt well on Bermuda grass. That's what they're going to find here this week. Guys basically from the South. Redman went to college at Clemson. I also took Sepp Straka at 55-1. He went to Georgia. He was 14th at the Safeway, 33rd at the Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic recently. Chesson Hadley, who went to Georgia Tech, he was at 80-1, finished 14th at the Safeway. Russell Knox, who went to school in Jacksonville, Florida. So, again, you see the theme here, guys from the South that are familiar with those Bermuda greens and the coastal courses. Russell Knox was 9th at the Safeway and 20th last year at the Sea Island course in St. Simons Island, Georgia. Brian Stewart I took at 80-1, been playing very well lately, finished 3rd at the Safeway recently and was 10th last year at Sea Island, 33rd at Punta Cana. And then my longest shot was Vaughn Taylor, who went to Augusta State, another guy from not too far away who putts very well on Bermuda. He's at 175-1 and a little bit worrisome there is he's missed 8 cuts in his last 9 events. So we'll see if he can turn things around in a hurry here.
36-1, though, the short shot from Brady on Doc Redman. There are your plays. Redman, Straka, Knox, Stewart, Hadley, and Taylor. Any other bets here, or are you sticking with those for this one?
Yeah, with these, it's not quite the silly season, but, after the Masters, we're going to shut down long shots until we return in the new year with Torrey Pines. So I've been kind of going a lot lighter on some of these events. I did play one head-to-head matchup, Russell Knox at even money over Scott Piercy.
Okay.
And then took some of these future plays and put them into some top fives and top tens as well.
Makes sense. Brady, appreciate it. I know it was short, but I look forward to having you here on set before the Masters. What a week that's going to be a couple weeks from now. Can't wait, man. And we appreciate the picks weekly, my friend.
Absolutely. Look forward to seeing you again soon.
Brady Cannon, everybody, host of Long Shots, along with Wes Reynolds, here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And oh, by the way, he's won a super contest. Michael Lombardi next. I got questions right here on a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming back.
To A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
Best thing on this show, the four corners idea, Jason. Just, where the four states intersect, Utah, Colorado, Arizona, New Mexico. Just buy property right next to that and then gamble in all four states when you go. Just sit around a little circle there with four lists.
It's a great idea. Somebody's going to do it.
That's right. On the cutting edge. By the way, a month with more high-stakes buzzer beaters and walk-off dingers than ever before demands a bigger bankroll. And with this exclusive offer from BetMGM Sports for VSiN listeners, new customers can get their first deposit matched instantly with up to $250 in free bets with bonus code VSiN250. Discover why BetMGM is the king of sportsbooks with parlay, bonus payouts, boosted odds specials, daily promotions, and much more. Just download the BetMGM app today. Use bonus code VSiN250 to get your first deposit match with up to $250 in free bets. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager. Colorado, Indiana, New Jersey, Nevada, or West Virginia only. Please gamble responsibly. And if you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado and Nevada. 1-800-GAMBLER in New Jersey and West Virginia. And if you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. Promotional offer not available in the state of Nevada. Yeah, all right. Just want to make sure I got that right at the end. Ladies and gentlemen, here's the host of the Lombardi Line, which comes up the top of the hour here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. He, of course, also has the podcast, The GM Shuffle, which he does with Adnan Virk. He writes for The Athletic. The name of the book is Gridiron Genius, and you can follow him on Twitter at MLombardiNFL. He is the great Michael Lombardi. Good morning to you, Michael. I can't hear Michael, but I think he hears me. Michael, do we have you? We don't have Michael. There we go. Do we have Michael right there?
Hello?
There you go, Michael. How are you, man?
I am great. Thank you, Gil. Good to be here. Thank you.
Let me ask you some questions because I got a whole bunch. And I was talking college football with Pete Fusak earlier, so I'll riff on that for a second. There have to be some very nervous teams this morning. Trevor Lawrence announcing that he hinted that he might stay in school. And so many teams angling for him. Do you believe that he may not even be there? Do you think it was just a prisoner of the moment? He was frustrated with the question, or he's just tired of the question? Or do you think there's, and do you think, if that's the case, that he's going to stay, that there's that big of a gap between him and, say, Justin Fields?
Well, there's a huge gap between him and Justin Fields. Let's make no mistake about that. And so this kid has all the leverage. He knows it. And, you know, I think he's not going to make any decision until he sees the landscape of the National Football League. What's the order of the draft? You know, if Jacksonville's the order, he's going to have to take advice from some people to see what direction Jacksonville goes in. If it's the Jets, then he's got to look at that. I think this is a little bit like, remember, everybody forgets Peyton Manning did this. Peyton Manning could have came out as a junior. The Jets had the first pick in the draft. They were talking about trading that pick. He decided to stay in school, and he went back and came out in Indianapolis, walked into the Hall of Famer. So, you know, I think this is all about timing. It's about leverage. And for me, I'm not surprised one bit. I mean, it's also salesmanship. If you got to show this kid you got a plan to win, just that you're not hoping that when you draft him, you win.
By the way, I've never said this to you before, but I have a Peyton Manning theory. It's more of like a football coordinating theory, where I often have said it's the one sport where you really we think of careers with a giant brush and have no idea how it would have turned out if guys ended up in different places. Can't say that about basketball, right? LeBron's going to be LeBron no matter where he goes. But I used to say, as a Washington football team fan, I used to say if Peyton Manning was drafted by the Washington football team, I'm not saying he wouldn't have been good, but I don't think if he had a different coordinator every year, he would have become Peyton Manning. And to that, you say what?
Well, I say probably his personality would have forced that he wouldn't have had a coordinator every year. But I think it's a fantastic question. And it's a chapter in a book that I have to write about what if. What if Bill Belichick stayed the coach of the Jets? What if Al Davis was able to pull off that trade for John Elway, the one he really wanted to make, that the league he felt like was keeping him away from Elway, and they traded him to the Denver Broncos because Al felt that the Broncos were always getting preferential treatment. There's a thousand of those conspiracy theories, and sure, you're talking to a guy that does not think Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone, so it plays right into what I love.
Mark it down, Jason. We get a little notation in Lombardi's future book. And to those who inspired the what if chapter, just maybe if we can put that in the book. All right. Ron Rivera, we talked about this the other week. He goes for two against the Giants. Win or lose is the outcome of that play. They lose. With the NFC East just as wide open as ever. First of all, how does that look now? Still, it's not aging well. And what possible scenario should a team do that in the future?
Well, I think a lot of it, and Tony Dungy tweeted this today, and I agree with him. I think a lot of these decisions that are just being done as a line item decision, you know, it's this, the chart says go for two. Watch the game. I watched that game. The Giants were in control. Washington was in control. The Giants were struggling. They made a big run with Daniel Jones. They picked up a fumble. They returned it. If he goes for a single point there and he makes it. Now, look, you're talking to a guy that was recommending Cleveland last week that lost on an extra point. So nothing's obviously given, right? But if he makes that extra point, he's 20-20, he's going to stop the Giants. They're going to be conservative. They're not going to go and expose their offensive line, their left tackle, to the pass rush. He gets the ball back. He kicks a field goal. He's going to win the game. He's 3-0 in the East. I think it's your job as a head coach, as the chief decision maker, as the chief common sense coach, is to do what's right to give yourself the best chance to keep trying to stay in the game and win the game. If everything comes down to one play, if everything comes down to a good luck charm, then what are we doing? Why are we working all this week? Seriously, like, why are we doing it? Why do we put it all on one play? Like, let's play the whole game out.
Michael, I've given Matt Patricia flack, perhaps rightfully so, but the Lions are 3-3. They blew a game to the Bears. They beat Arizona, you know, everyone's flavor of the month. Finally pulled out a game they were destined to lose, thanks in part to some next-level coaching, allowing Atlanta to score late, and Atlanta sort of being dumb enough to allow it. Now the Lions add Everson Griffin in a trade. Their pass rush was already trending up. Schedule looks pretty manageable as I look over it right now on the computer. Next month, anyway, it looks pretty good. Are the Lions worth taking seriously is basically what I'm asking.
You know, if you ask Will Hill, who's on our show, The Lombardi Line, every week, and he writes for Point Spread Weekly all the time, he's a Detroit aficionado. He's been on them campaign for the last 3 weeks. You know, I watched that tape against Atlanta. If Atlanta just kneels, three kneels
yeah.
and kicks the field goal, the game's over. I mean, it's really one of the biggest. I mean, everybody's saying, why didn't Gurley get, why did he not stop? Forget that. Why did we even get to that point? Just kneel. Center the ball. Tell the have the kicker tell you where he wants it. Center it to exactly the spot and let the clock run down. I mean, it was a horrible decision. But to the Lions, look, I thought their pass rush the last couple weeks in Jacksonville and in Atlanta has improved. This will be a huge test for them. They need to use their athleticism and speed to get after Phillip Rivers. And I think if they do that, they can beat this Colt team. They'll move the ball on the Colts. The Colts are predictable on defense, and you can attack their secondary. So I think they're certainly right in it. I mean, there's look, the Bears are flawed. We know that. They're great on defense. They're horrible on offense. We know the Packers, you can move the ball on them. And Minnesota, we're going to see in the next couple days, if they have a bunch of sell-offs, they may be packing it in for next year as well.
Yes or no, Jets finish 0-16. Yes or no, Jags finish 1-15.
I think yes on the Jags. I know Marone's going to try to coach his tail off. He's trying to different things. I just don't think that team's very talented. I think the Colts lost that game. Jacksonville never won that game. And Jacksonville's good enough to be in games with teams for 50 minutes, but then it falls apart, like what happened with the Chargers. I do think the Jets have a legitimate chance to go 0-16, yes.
Mac Jones, we talked about this, Tua, as it relates to Justin Herbert. In terms of, they see Justin Herbert playing well, maybe more of pressure to put Tua in. Mac Jones is playing well at Alabama. So let me just sort of add that to the Tua thing. Are you nervous for Tua in terms of his performance coming up here in the coming weeks? And along with that, is Mac Jones a lottery pick?
I don't know if he's a lottery pick yet. I need to keep watching him, but I think he's impressive. There's no doubt. I think he's impressive. What bothers me about Tua is his size. These six-foot quarterbacks, and I know there's Russell Wilson out there, but Kyler Murray struggles to see. Baker Mayfield really struggles to see. Baker Mayfield struggles to see down the field. Now, when he can run the football and they can run their offense around him, it's okay. So I'm anxious to see what Tua does. Do the Rams take away the boots, the nakeds, the things that he's got to really utilize? And then the biggest question, Gil, that no one can answer, only God, can he stay healthy? I got to see him take a hit and get up and tick and see what he's moving around. I'm not sure he can do that. That's not been the case while he was at Alabama. Regardless of what Lee Steinberg and all the media, the Boomer Esiason says, you know, about his health, durability is an issue with the kid.
We all feel bad that OBJ, Odell Beckham Jr., got hurt, out for the season. But I immediately said it on Sunday, and I think I'm not alone, where it's like Baker Mayfield just seems unburdened when he's not in that offense. It's like, oh, I don't have to feed this guy. I don't have that pressure. Let me just play the game as it comes to me. And he was fabulous in the second half of that game last week against Cincinnati. Are the days of OBJ being a number one wide receiver and a huge cog in anybody's offense done?
I think they've been over for the last 4 years since he signed the contract. He had 35 touchdowns his first 3 years in the National Football League. That's what's created this momentum. Once you create the momentum with the media, you never lose it. I mean, Javion Clowney's created the momentum. He still hasn't gotten a sack, but he doesn't lose it. Once you create the momentum, he's got 16 touchdowns in the last 4 years. He hasn't made big plays in the last. I mean, Odell is a nice player. He's a good player. I'm not saying he doesn't belong in the Pro Bowl where he doesn't make a team, but when you're driving to the stadium, you're not sitting there saying, oh my gosh, I can't, he's going to just score a touchdown every time he gets his hand on the ball. Tyreek Hill, I do that. Tyreek Hill scares the hell out of me and some other receivers in the league. But I think they'll move along just fine. I think they've overpaid Odell. It gets them away. He won't be on the team next year. I think there's no doubt about that.
All right, 45 seconds. Last question here, Michael. Trade deadline coming up. Should we be aware? Are you hearing anything? Should we be looking out for something? Fitzpatrick to Dallas, something like that?
I think teams are really reluctant to take on salary. I think the only teams going to make trades are the teams that think they have a chance to really compete for a Super Bowl. Everybody else is trying to dump salary.
Michael Lombardi, everybody. Lombardi Line, top of the hour. Michael, thank you for spending some time, sir.
Thanks, Gil.
Michael Lombardi, best in the business. Bill Belichick, Bill Parcells, Bill Walsh, Al Davis. He's worked with all of them. And he's worked with you, Jason Kahn, as well. Add that to the list.
That's how I feel.
Yeah. Congratulations again to all Dodgers bettors and fans. We got it done. Congrats. Thanks to everybody on the show today. Brady Cannon, Paul Spohr, Michael Lombardi, Brian Musburger for making a appearance by tape. Good luck with everything tonight. We'll do it in depth. NFL Week 8 all week long right here on the Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.